It's very cool. It's very exciting. Okay, what I wanted to show you is a sample pack that's available online. If you haven't already found this, it's on dev.windows.com. And you can go browse the samples. You can look at all of the source code for the samples online without downloading them, which is sometimes extremely helpful. You don't want to download it and install it just to look at the source code. Sure. In Visual Studio. So you can just look at the source code online. But if you go to the download the tools and SDKs, I want you to see that you can go down here to the sample pack, the sample app pack. Let me zoom into that. The sample app pack is available. It says it's 300 megabytes, but it also gives you the option when you get there of choosing a language. And for instance, if you grab the JavaScript samples, sure. You get all of the Windows SDK JavaScript samples in 41 megabytes. Okay?
That's nice.
Yeah. So that's really nice. So what I'm going to do is I've already downloaded this. So this is like a cooking show. I put it in the oven, and then an hour later, this sure. is what it's going to look like. And you get this samples pack. Look at this thing. Woo! It's huge, okay? One of these is called the Sharing Content Target app. I highly recommend that you install this one, and I'll show you why. If you open this one, you go into the JavaScript and you open it. Again, I've already done that for you. So you're in the app, you're in Visual Studio, you've got the Share Target, you run this, and of course, whenever you run a Windows 8 app, it installs on your machine.
Right.
So it's installed it on my machine, and it does nothing.
Oh.
This app does nothing. It's just a simple UI that just tells you what it's for, but it does nothing in its UI, okay? Let me just close that right back down. Okay, but because I just ran that, it's now installed on the machine, and now whenever I go share, that's going to be another one of the targets. So let's go back to our app in CodeShow, and let's say I want to share this.
What? Now, I thought you closed that app down.
I did close that app down, but Windows knows about it. It's installed on the machine, and it has declared that it can receive text. I'll show you how it's declared that in just a second. So the reason why this is a really nice sample for you to run, install once, and then have on your machine is because if you share with it, its behavior, it knows that you're a developer and you're testing, its behavior is to say, here's what I received. So it tells you all about the data package that it received. It says, the data package that you sent me had a title of Blue Whale, and it had a data package with text. And in that text, there was Blue Whale. Okay? So let's actually go to Wikipedia, and let's search for Blue Whale. I did that the long way, by the way. I should have shown off the search. I still have these old habits. Here's the link to a Blue Whale on Wikipedia. So in our app, in our CodeShow app, let's jump into our share, and I set the text, right?
Right.
Let's actually also send one of these other six types, which is set a URI. Now, I can set a new URI. I need to use this helper class, the foundation URI. It's expecting a URL. I can close that up, and now I'm passing a URI as well. Cool. My data package now contains two things, text and URI. All right?
Cool.
Now, if I run this and I share it out, and I type in here, Blue Whale share, I get, now the People app has shown up. Why do you suppose that's shown up?
It must accept the URI.
But not plain text, right?
Right.
Absolutely. So that one's shown up. But my share target has shown up. Did you notice anything weird about the order of those?
I did. They're in a different order now.
Yeah, the share target's on top because it's like MRU. I recently used that one,
right.
And so it's bringing it to the top for me.
You must like that one.
Yeah, I must like it. The user doesn't need to worry about the fact that they have 50 apps installed, so sharing's going to be difficult. It's always going to be surfacing those for you. So I'm going to go ahead and share with that app. Now it says, here's a package that has text, Blue Whale. It also has a URI, and here's that URI. Okay?
Fantastic.
So we won't dig too much into the rest of the things that you can pack into a data package, but it is text, URI, rich text, HTML, files, images, and then a catch-all. That catch-all custom is defined on schema.org. If you go to schema.org, you get schema.org, and schema.org is a definition of a whole bunch of types. Let's go ahead and search for a book. Let's say we're making a library app, And we know that we're going to need to share books with people. Well, what's a book? Go to schema.org, look up the book, and this defines a book. We now have a standard way of talking about books with other apps. So if we want to share with a bookseller, we're a library, or you know, we're some other kind of book app, everybody's talking the same language. Very, very nice.
Cool.
Is that impressive?
It is impressive.
I'm extremely impressed by it. Now, what if we wanted to implement and be ourselves a share target?
Right.
So to do that, I'm going to actually create a brand new app in Visual Studio. It's a really super simple one, but we're going to do this on the fly. Oh, looks like I already did it. Let's go ahead and do it anew so you guys can see it happen from the beginning. Okay, so I'm going to create a new JavaScript app, Windows Store app. It's going to be, let's just make it blank. We don't need to use the navigation app for this one. And let's call this My Share Target. The location is fine. The solution is fine. All fine. Go. Creating a brand new app, and we want it to be a share target. Now, the way to do that is to jump immediately into the AppX manifest. Now, if you go to capabilities, there are capabilities that you can declare here. But if you go to declarations, there are declarations which are subtly different. And one of those declarations is that you want to be a share target. When you determine that you're a share target, you tell it, okay, I'm a share target, and what can I receive? Here, this is telling me you have to define at least one type. Mm. I'm going to go ahead and define that I can receive the text type. Okay? It's all the validation went away, so it likes that. Now, how do I determine what I do when I get shared with? That's really simple. I look in default.js. This might look familiar. You've probably been here before. This is and the default.js is where you get all of your PLM stuff. What happens whenever the user opens your app? If you look in here, we're determining what happens when the user launches your app. But if I go down here and I type in that I want to handle a different case, I can do an else args detail kind equals activation kind dot share target. Okay? In the interest of time, we won't go any further than that, but everything that happens now in this block is going to happen whenever the user shares with you. And you can make this navigate to a page, you can make it do some math, you can make it solve, you know, the issue of world peace, whatever you want to happen whenever you get shared with, that's going to happen right there.
That's cool.
All right.
It does look pretty easy.
Yeah, so that is search and share implementation. Now, do you want to tell us a little bit about settings?
I do. I would love to talk about settings. So basically, if you think about the discussion we had earlier about the changes that we have going from one mode of thinking with all the Chrome to another, there inevitably is that, what about all these miscellaneous things that we used to have available? You know, think about a traditional menu bar. It always began with like file, and then you had edit, and then you had all these other things, and you had a Windows and about. Well, we've been talking about how immerse the user in all the, you know, the content, but then what about the things that you feel like, well, they're going to need to have this. I'm going to have navigation for some things. And those things that are kind of off, like maybe account information, or maybe it's a documentation link, or it's a, hey, it's a all about us, here's where you can contact, or all that can go into the settings area. And that's what we're going to be focusing on right now, is how can you implement that into your project. So let's go ahead and switch over here to my screen so I can showcase what we're talking about specifically visually. You could see on the screen right now that it's a little fuzzy, but this is an example of a settings where we're looking at what your options are, if you wanted to provide feedback, if you wanted to rate and review, establish permissions. That's all done in that settings area. So think of it for all those kind of things. This is what settings would be used for. Now, we've been talking about how there's different types of ways to get to it. Of course, if you swipe from the right side of the screen, that's it's going to show. But Windows key I is how you get the settings. So, and there was a question on the list at one point that was like, is there a fast way to get to Control Panel? That might be nice. If you're actually in desktop and you do a Windows key I, you'll see Control Panel appear as one of these options in settings. So it's a very fast way to get to it. Now, what would you need to do in order to create your own settings? So I thought we should break it down into basically two major steps. The first would be you need to create a page that's going to have in itself a settings flyout. Now, that's what's being done right here. In fact, I didn't mean to zoom. Let me do that again. Right here. This control that you see on the screen, it's called a data win control. It's pointing to a settings flyout. It's specifically designed so that when your application is requesting, hey, I want to see your settings, we're going to have that control. It's going to be the immediate child of the body element of the page that you just created for this. So you're not putting this in your default or your home page. You're putting this in a brand new page that you created. In this example, and the one that you're going to see in code, I created a div with an ID of about, and I think that that's important that you also remember this particular thing about the about, because this is going to be used in the next slide. So what we give the ID of the settings flyout is handy for something. So I remember about, and then there's these options that you can apply. So for example, you can have a typical width settings, which might be narrow, or you can make it wide, which would be what this data win options does if you have a lot of content on there that you want to show. So that is creating a page, and you'll see that in code in just a second. Then the important thing to do, and this is probably going to be done in your default.js file, and that is you're going to go to the winjs.application instance, and you're going to say, I need to have an idea of when settings are going to be requested. So that's done with this on settings. I'm applying an anonymous function, but notice the argument here is very important, because the argument in this example is actually containing some information, and the key thing that we want here is the application commands property off of the detail property of that argument. What that allows me to do is go in and say, okay, you know, when we were looking at settings before, every single settings can have multiple like menu options in it. So I'm going to add one called about. And that's the ID. Remember from the previous slide? That's my ID to that control that is going to ultimately be in the page that we're specifying right here. I can give the title, which you see right here. The title means when I open up the settings pane from the right side, what do I want that to look like? So when they click on it. So I just have the word about there capitalized. And finally, down here, I use the WinJS UI settings flyout.populate settings using that argument so it can populate that settings pane. So I'm going to escape out of here and go into Visual Studio. So right here in Visual Studio, I have already created the About page, and I have that open here, and I'm going to zoom in, and you can see that the ID is About. And I also wanted to show that because we have the benefit of using the CSS that is inside of the Windows JS library, I could use things like make this class a header, make this class content, so we can get a separation of the header and the body of the settings, easily defining that with our classes. I can have a button. Now notice this button here, it's just a standard button. But because I said it's class equals win-back button, it's actually going to provide a little ellipsis with a back arrow instead of showing up as a rectangle. So that's all I have on here. And then, of course, I'm saying, well, what's my content? Well, shameless plug, I'm putting my website in there. Let's see how the default JS file looks, where we hooked up these settings. So in here, I'm saying, okay, here's the settings, there's the arg, let me set the application commands, about is the ID, I want it to show as about, and it'll go there. Now, because I've reused this word, maybe I'll say, instead of about, I'll say like about jumpstart. Whoops. So you can see where this shows up. And I'll go ahead and run this application now. So the whole benefit of settings is that I don't have a button that goes to settings. That, I think that's what I love about it. I'm going to use settings like I would anywhere else in the operating system. I'm going to hit, I can go there by, again, Windows key C, which says, okay, pull up the charms bar so I can see settings at the bottom. Or the other thing that I could do is Windows key I, and there's where that about jump, that what I just typed in, that's what I meant. It becomes the title. Now remember, I only have one application command right now. I can add as many of these as I want to that makes sense for my application. This is the one that was standard with the application itself, but to get to my custom one, I can click here, and now it says about. How did it have that styling? Remember, I used that when header, and also for the content, and my little button over here is using that when back button, and that's why I got that little glyph appearing. Now, what would happen if I happened to click on this link in the context of my application? Well, it's going to open up Internet Explorer, and man, was that not the most shameful thing to do to bring up my website. All right, I'll go back over there. But that could be a reason why is that you might have help documentation that would be supported for your application that would be on the Internet. And I don't know if we're, I don't recall if we're going to do this today, but one of the things you can do in the settings, which some have done, is if you just click the link, it's going to take you right to Internet Explorer. There is also the ability to embed an iframe inside of that settings, and that iframe can be mapping to some documentation that also resides on your website. So settings are a really nice, powerful thing that you can use. Again, you can add as many commands as you want. They can also be sensitive to the context, and you should definitely integrate it, because here's the thing. Those charms, they're not changing. We're always going to have search, we're always going to have share, and we're always going to have settings. Your users are going to expect something. So if it's the kind of data where you need to set something background color for something and you want it to be a global setting and maybe even save it, and we'll later find out from Jeremy what that's going to mean in terms of how what are options for saving that data, you could do that all there from that settings pane so that you have that huge landscape or that real estate available in your app.
Yeah. Now, you may have noticed in the Code Show app that I haven't taken the time yet to do too much in the settings. It does bring out a settings pane, and it looks like I'm implementing the ability to change the tile color. That's exactly what I'm doing, but it doesn't work yet. But that's the type of thing that you might drop into that settings pane. So the next setting or the next contracts that we want to show are, and not necessarily show as in dig into, but at least introduce, are the file picker and the play to. Now, the file picker, you've seen in various places, I'm sure. It's kind of a replacement of the open file dialog and the save file dialog
right.
in traditional apps.
Yeah.
It gives you a whole UI for that. And actually, if I open my mail app and I hit Control-N to create a new mail, and then I say I want an attachment, and where would I find that attachment? Where might I see that? Oh, how about in the command bar, attachments? So I go to an attachment, and it says, now, you are looking for a file to attach to your email. Where do you want to find that file? In classic file open dialogues, you were looking for a file on your computer, right?
That's right.
Now you're just looking for a file. It might be on your computer. It might be on your SkyDrive. It might even be in another app. So this is extremely powerful because I could, for instance, go, and instead of searching for my files, I could grab whatever I want from my camera or from my photos or whatever. So let's go to the photos and see if there are any. Yeah, there's a couple in there. And let's go ahead and grab the NVIDIA. Is there a photo in there? I don't know. Psych.
Oh, that's funny.
Anyway, I could grab a photo from somewhere right here, and it's going to attach that photo as if it was a file on my computer,
sure.
But it may not be at all.
That's right.
It could actually grab it from outside of it. Let's say you have a recipe app that makes recipes and you want to attach a file to your computer. You can now go look in that recipe app if they extend the file picker
sure.
contract, and you can attach a recipe that doesn't exist as a file anywhere. It's pretty nifty.
That's pretty cool.
The same thing works for saving files out. You can save files out to another app. So you could actually save a file and be saving a recipe into an app by using the save dialog. So pretty awesome. The cool thing about it is that, again, let's say Picture Wizard 2014 comes out and it's the next big thing, you know? It's the way that everybody shares their photos. Well, you didn't plan for that when you wrote your app, but you don't have to. As long as you are asking for your images by using the file picker, Photo Wizard 2014 is just going to show up for users that installed it. Okay?
That's great. Now, it's great to know that the world's going to last that long.
Yeah, it
the
is.
The 24th.
Yeah, awesome. We'll probably get that far.
Yeah, that's good.
So Play 2 is another contract that we don't have time to dig into, but Play 2 you've got to know about. Play 2, the classic scenario is I've got a tablet, I'm watching Netflix, I walk in the front door, and I say, send this or play this to my television. And if my TV is DLNA compliant, it just sends that Netflix experience to my television, and now all of a sudden my tablet is free to be a control panel as wow. It's playing the video to a different device.
That's cool.
You could play to a printer, you could play to an Xbox if you had it hooked up to a TV and you didn't have a DLNA compliant TV or whatever. I know what I'm missing right now on my home TV, because I have Windows 8 on it, I don't have touch. But I do have fingerprints all over it. It just doesn't work.
Right, yeah. You can try.
I can try.
Yeah.
Okay, one more thing that I want to show you that's not technically a contract, but it's some of the built-in functionality in the WinRT library that kind of acts like one because it's so handy. And that is the media capture. When you're trying to capture an image or capture a video, you have a control called Camera Capture UI. And Camera Capture UI abstracts away all of the capturing of video from your webcam or from a connected video camera or from your camera, whatever. And so you don't have to worry about any of it. And the media capture example, excuse me, the media capture example is in CodeShow, so you can go look at it. And I don't have the hardware to show the thing off entirely right here, but you'll get the idea, and you can probably do it on your home computer because I'm sure you have media capabilities. The tile that I clicked on, if I did that too fast, I'll do it again, is Media Capture. Hmm. I'll open that up, and now I can do three things with this example. And then I can go look at the code and figure out how those three things work. The first is to capture a still image. Now, when I capture a still image, it crashes on mine because I don't have the hardware to do that. But on yours, it's going to open the Camera Capture UI, give your user the opportunity to capture a picture and confirm it, and even crop it, maybe retake it if they want to. All that functionality is built into that Camera Capture UI. And then you can hit OK, and that image comes into your app, and you get to consume that image. Same thing with video. And that example that I have there is actually taking the video, saving it as an MP4, and then referencing that MP4 in the app so you get to see it live in there. Let's go look at the code, though, so we can see basically what's going on in there. So I'm going to hit Control semicolon and type Media Cap because I know that's the name of my page, and it brings me, hey, right to my Media Cap. I'll open all three at the same time, and here I am in the code. It's good to learn all the keyboard shortcuts in Visual Studio. You can be a lot more efficient. Now, the first one is just this right here. This is to capture an image and display it on your app. So you'll notice that when the user clicks this button, I want this to happen. I want to create a new Camera Capture UI, and I want to capture a file asynchronously. And it's asking for a mode, a way to capture a file, and I'm telling it, photo, please. I don't want video in this, only photo. So I say photo. Now, that's an async function, you can tell, because of the async. And so I do a dot then, or dot done, almost the same thing. I do a dot done. And then I get access to that captured file. And if it exists, in other words, if they completed the scenario and took a picture and I got a file, then I want to go set the source of my image to that file.
So again, that's amazing. With just a few lines of code, technically very few lines of code, you not only said, I need you to go get me that photo and take it, but you've already assigned where it's going to go.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You know what? You're right. It is amazing.
It is amazing.
Now, the next button is for the video, and the only reason why this one's a little bit longer is because we get a little bit tricky with setting the format that we want to use and capturing some errors in case there's an error, but it's pretty much the same code. Instead of photo mode, we say I want to be in video mode. And by the way, you can choose photo, you can choose video, or you can choose both and let the user decide what they want to do. Take a photo or take a video, and then whenever you get the result, you just decide what you're going to do with it. So this is setting that video that we just captured as the source for a video tag in the HTML, and then you can hit play.
Wow.
Now the third one, are you ready for this? Hang on to your hat.
My hood?
Hang on to your hood. Look at that one. Looks huge compared, right? You know what this does? It records audio. And why would that be huge?
Yeah.
The reason why, because the audio obviously doesn't work through the camera capture UI. That's a different thing. And so I took this opportunity to show you the use of the media capture functionality. Now, the media capture is not just for audio. It works for audio, video, images, whatever. It's a low-level control of your camera. So whereas camera capture UI is like, just fire it and let Windows handle how it captures from the webcam and then give it back to you as the app. It's all abstracted away. In media capture, you have full control of this. So I've set a few settings so you can tell what's going on. Here I'm setting the audio device ID and the capture mode, what it is that I want to capture. And then here I'm choosing that I want to use my headphones. If you're using this at home, you might want to come in here and set this to 0 or 1 or 2, depending on which audio device you want to use. In fact, if you wanted to create a little user interface that told the user, I noticed that you have your built-in microphone, your headphones, and you know something else, you could give them the ability to choose what source they wanted. But here I'm just hard coding that, setting it to my headphones. And then I'm doing an audio capture, starting it. If the user has not started anything yet, then I'm starting, and so I change the button so that it's red. You can tell that it's recording, and I save that that audio file. Then, if the user has done that, they're in capture mode, so the else will fire, and the button will act like a stop button, and that will stop the audio and set that resulting audio behind the audio tag in your app, and all of a sudden you'll be able to listen to the audio that you just recorded.
So cool.
Yeah. So we're coming to the end of this module talking about contracts and the media capture and things like that. So go ahead and feel free to drop some questions in there. We'll take a second to look and see if any of the questions apply. Maybe we can answer a couple of them live right now, and then we'll go ahead and take a break. Have you seen any questions that we should answer live?
I think one was answered. Yeah, you can't buy a webcam from the Windows Store.
Yeah, the Windows Store is software only.
Let's see.
There is, however, a Microsoft Store that they could search for and purchase hardware from there. So,
sure.
Yep, definitely. I think Microsoft's got some incredible webcams. There's a question about the roaming state folder. We're going to dig into that in Module 6, so we'll save that for Module 6. Is there an online store? Yep, there's a hardware store called the Microsoft Store, and there is a software store called the Windows Store. Okay, well, that probably wraps that up, so let's go ahead and take a break. We're going to go to the lunch break, and so we'll join up again after that. We have all code in the afternoon.
All code. So thank you very much for staying tuned so far. You're not going to want to miss what we're going to share with you later on.
See you later.